Flanagan's Ecologic. Dinner with Amory. Just back from 10 days in the mountains of Colorado, the Roaring Fork Valley to be specific, Old Snowmass to be precise. Actually, that's Snowmass, but the locals throw in the old, so it's not confused with Snowmass Village, the ski area resort complex. My first night, daughters Sierra and Skye organized a mini reunion of my Rocky Mountain Institute colleagues from the late 1980s. Levins, Sardinsky, and Heedy. Others too, like Monk and Childs. Perfect temperature on the deck, the magnificence of spring in the Rockies. Dinner two nights later, Amory, myself, and Sierra and Skye. They've known Amory since they were born. Off to Cafe Bernard in Basalt. Judy was out of town and Amory was hungry. We think the meal really fulfilled him. Between calamari and our entrees and dessert, we had more of a chance to reminisce and catch up on Amory's consulting, RMI happenings, and new developments in the valley. At one point, Amory turned to me, pointing to my jacket, and said, "What does EcoMotion do?" I replied, "Once upon a time, not too long ago, there was a very curious man, a high primate, you would say. He charted a distinctly different utility approach and formed a movement that ultimately transformed the electric utility industry worldwide. Instead of building more and more coal plants, clearly polluting, why not try to use less plants?" Amory described that nuclear fission was like cutting butter with a chainsaw. Overkill. He thought, why not try a different approach? He called it the soft energy path, the road not taken. Where did this come from, this vision? Amory explained that you don't always have to add. You can subtract. That's true for power plants and a good deal of engineering. The soft energy path is based on energy efficiency, subtracting from the gross load utilities have been obligated to serve. And it's easier to subtract than to add. It just comes in smaller chunks. Efficiency is the art of using precise amounts of energy to get the job done. And now the net can be generated with renewable power, distributed throughout our society in benign configurations. The Curious Man's Energy Philosophy was published in the Journal of Foreign Affairs. Soon thereafter, the very curious and unquestionably smart man developed a following. I was part of it. He went to the White House to explain the soft path to President Jimmy Carter. He married a dynamo, literally and figuratively a hunter. He wore a cowboy hat, but it never seemed much like a cowboy. Instead of wrangling cattle, he created a generation of energy wonks who followed his teachings. He created a think tank high in the Rockies. Some alumni became lighting designers. Others installed solar panels. One glommed on to biophilic design. Others a lifetime of carbon accounting and policy designs. Another night, I have dinner with the general manager of Holy Cross Energy, his board chair and chief engineer. HCE is the local cooperative. Brian Hannigan explains his utility's progressive stance, its penchant for local, distributed resources, his strategy for partnerships with his customers for generation and storage. HCE is now 50% green and on a path to net zero. His chief engineer, Chris Bildy, has a sparkle in his eye, working to answer my question about hooking up mobile generators and vehicle-to-grid configurations. Chris was concise and targeted. It's all about the interconnection. HCE will work hard to make interconnection easy for its members. Refreshing. While California utilities limit on-site solar production to site usage, HCE pays 10 cents per kilowatt hour, more than double the California rate for overproduction, to encourage net positive homes. This is part of the new age utility that Amory envisioned. HCE is welcoming distributed generation, relying on it, in fact. By the end of the evening, I'd signed up for 2 Tesla Powerwalls at our Snowmass home. Their first priority is cycling, as orchestrated by Holy Cross. But in the event of an outage, the stored energy is all mine. Amory's early calling card in the electric utility industry was the term negawatts. These are the watts you don't need, thanks to energy efficiency technologies and conservation based on behaviors. Over dinner, Amory was talking about electric aviation and generating 8x efficiency gains doing so. He's consulting for revolutionary car companies. He inspired me with his powerful notions of mega steel and mega concrete. By designing lighter buildings, you need lots less steel and cement, finding a win-win-win between structural integrity, cost savings, and environmental savings. Spending time with my energy guru, absorbing Amory's talk about innovative technologies, was our great pleasure. He is a treasure in wit and energy. That night, he again gave us a sense of rational possibilities ahead. He makes thinking out of the box seem only logical. One thing is for sure, the curious man in the mountains has not lost an ounce of his curiosity. Good news, that is the root of his visions. Hybrid sailing on the Ramblin' Rose. What a day at sea. What a day of making new friends. Sailing on the Ramblin' Rose, thanks to its owner, an Econet news reader, the talented, charming, and down-to-earth James Richmond, pictured above winching in the mainsail. He was kind enough to invite us for a sail on his experimental yacht. As instructed, Terry and I have brought food and drinks. We rendezvous at the Coronado Yacht Club. We board and meet James and today's crew, his wife Leah, and their great friends Fred and Suzanne. I'd invited my great friend and bassist extraordinaire, Adam, to join us. We tour the boat. Each hull has a head, totally luxurious in size. The master suite has a major shower. We could get used to this. Time to get underway. James provides a quick safety check. Then we untie the lines and ease out of the berth. We motor south out of the anchorage and then east under the Coronado Bridge. It soars above us. What a blustery day. There's a strong headwind driving down the San Diego Bay. I'm struck by a crazy motorboat thrill ride going on. I've never seen so many people strapped in like a carnival ride. The Patriot jet boat was making high-speed spins and tricks and turns, getting everyone on board soaked. You can hear the cheers, the shrill of the voices. What terrific views of downtown San Diego. We pass the convention center, the Maritime Museum complete with its ships and aircraft carrier. We pass the Disney cruise ship, then round the bay near the airport, flights coming and going and adding to the color and cacophony of it all. The harbor is alive. Lots of boating activity on this Labor Day weekend. I had a really good time getting to know James. He has an infectious laugh and loves his new work-life balance at the helm of Sunwater Marine. He describes it as a nautical transportation company with a keen focus on spreading the benefits of renewable energy and electric propulsion to sea dwellers. James is my kind of guy, a Renaissance man for sure, with many interests and capabilities. We hit it off. His story of moving from energy efficiency and solar to the Ramblin' Rose is a good one. During the pandemic and while holed up in his Colorado mountain home, he searched the ads in Yachting Magazine. A sailor for all of his life, he wasn't naive about boats, and there it was, an ad for the Ramblin' Rose. It was, and still is, a charter catamaran docked at the Coronado Yacht Club. James bought the 2015 Leopard 40 catamaran sight unseen and prepared it for charter and as the anchor for his new company. James initially planned to add more solar panels, but then he began to learn about electric propulsion and how that might work on the Ramblin' Rose. This excites him. James is handy and retrofitted the boat with lots more solar, tucked battery banks in the hold, and installed the electric motors, their controllers, and propeller shafts. He converted the Ramblin' Rose into a hybrid sailboat. We're all used to the notion of hybrid cars. They have two sources of propulsion energy. Hybrid buildings is a somewhat more obscure concept that we have reported on here at Econet News. They use battery banks to provide an alternate source of power during peak periods. Now this, a hybrid sailboat. It primarily is a sailboat, relying on Mother Nature's gusts of wind. It also has solar panels on board that charge battery banks that power ocean volt electric motors. While catamarans are certainly not sleek sailing vessels, they are perfect for entertaining. They're also quite perfect for solar. The catamaran provides lots of roof space for solar panels. Jim equipped the boat with Sunflare CIGS panels because they are flexible and durable, and because they operate individually given a bypass diode on each panel. That's important as the sails are always shading something. How durable? You can walk on them. The coolest feature, and one that clearly excites James the most, are the two ocean volt
15 kW servoprop motors. There is one motor on each hull. These motors have drive shafts that spin propellers. The propeller blades can be pitched to optimize efficiency. They can also spin around to run backwards. I was fascinated by the way James used the electric motors to give the boat a boost when coming about. The motors can also generate power. The propeller is capturing energy like a wind turbine as the boat proceeds under sail. Each electric motor is powered by a bank of 12 lithium iron phosphate batteries, which provide 21 kilowatt hours of power. Once we got to the top of the harbor, we killed the engines, hoisted the main, unfurled the jib, and had that great feeling when the strong wind filled our sails. We pass a 12-meter that takes out passengers. There's a major naval presence here in Coronado. Coming out of the head of the bay and into the open Pacific, we head down and swing south to avoid acres of kelp forests off Point Loma. James points to a favorite surfing spot at the base of the cliffs, only accessible by boat. I'm happy to take the helm and get a sense how this catamaran performs in the ocean waters. It's a glorious day to be on the ocean. Heading back into the harbor, we pass the San Salvador. It is a replica of the flagship of explorer San Juan Rodriguez Cabrillo. His 100-foot, full-rigged galleon was the first European vessel to reach America's west coast. The San Salvador arrived in what we now call the Port of San Diego in 1542. The replica now takes out passengers for four-hour sails in the San Diego Harbor. How fun. In no hurry to end our afternoon together, we dropped anchor in Glorieta Bay. There's a flotilla of partygoers on ships of all sizes around us. There's lots of music as boats pass by. Lots of bathing suits and canned beer. More for us too, laughter, being together, plotting future voyages afar, and enjoying the afternoon on the water. I recommend it. Carbon negative cement. This article draws heavily on the July 2021 Rocky Mountain Institute report, Profitably Decarbonizing Heavy Transport and Industrial Heat. Transporting these harder to abate sectors is not uniquely hard and can be lucrative. I salute Amory Lovins and his colleagues for this work and its rich insights. For those of us concerned about climate, cement is a big deal. But as this article attests, reforming the cement industry could result in fantastic CO2 reductions. The world consumes 4 billion tons of cement each year, comparable to global food production. Each ton produced releases 0.5 to 0.6 tons of CO2. Cement CO2 emissions are like steel. They account for 7 to 8% of the global total. Like steel, this amount of CO2 production exceeds the emissions of every country in the world except the United States and China. Cement is manufactured through a chemical combination of calcium, silicon, aluminum, iron, and other ingredients. Common materials used to manufacture cement include limestone, shells, and chalk combined with shale, clay, blast furnace slag, silica sand, and iron ore. There are four steps in its conventional manufacture. 1, crushing and grinding the raw materials. 2, blending the materials in correct proportions. 3, burning the prepared mix in kilns. This is where CO2 is released in a process where calcium carbonate is calcinated, its CO2 is burned off, and converted to lime, the primary component of cement. 4, grinding the burned product known as clinker and adding gypsum used to control the time of set of the cement. Half of the cement manufactured each year is used to bind sand and gravel to make concrete. The rest makes mortar, plaster, and blocks. Of all the cement made and used, half ends up in buildings, the other half in roads and bridges and other infrastructure. Cement CO2 emissions are formidable. At least 70% of the CO2 that results from the production of concrete comes from the 10% by weight that is the cement. Simply optimizing the cement mix could save up to 50% of the CO2. This is possible because concrete cement content can vary up to threefold without affecting performance. So using less cement in the manufacture of concrete reduces emissions dramatically. Novel cement chemistries there are. Some manufacturers are cutting emissions in the manufacture of cement. Changes in the composition of concrete, for instance, using fly ash, can cut CO2 emissions by 52 to 70%. Lafarge Holcim sells a portfolio of 23 green solutions, including EcoPact, which offers 30 to 100% carbon reductions. So Lydia makes a patchable cement that claims 50 to 70% reductions in CO2. Other manufacturers are striving for net negative emissions, meaning developing cements that actually absorb CO2. A potential game changer in the works by Solidia is using the carboxylates that could make cement production as a carbon sink. This process cures the cement not with water or CO2, but with carboxylates such as oxalates. Bottom line, instead of emitting 1.5 carbon atoms per calcium atom, cement could sequester 2.4 atoms gross or 0.5 to 2.5 net, making cement a carbon sink. Another company, Carbocrete, is manufacturing biocements made at room temperature. Others are working on electrochemical cement-making processes. Where else might there be gains in the carbon efficiency for cement? How about less infrastructure? For instance, permeable landscapes result in less demand for massive stormwater drain pipes. Modern manufacturing of building materials enables airy, bone-like structures that use far less cement and steel. Half of the CO2 solution may be rooted in the excessive way cement is specified and used. A study found that optimizing the European cement use could result in the use of 65% less cement. Saving concrete means less steel rebar too, cutting steel use for reinforcement by up to 50%. The Freedom Tower in New York City cut its cement use by 40% using a concrete mix that provided six times the strength of conventional concrete. The 128-story Shanghai Tower cut its wind loads and their structural systems by 24% by twisting the building's rectangular frame. Natural composites, notably wood and bamboo that absorb CO2, can also provide worthy replacements for concrete and steel. Cross-laminated timber is making a carbon-negative contribution to buildings. Many designs that cut carbon display what Amory calls revolutionary or rediscovered ancient design frugality. There's a plethora of solutions to dramatically reduce cement's CO2 emissions.